Yes. This is Polly Dewhurst. It's June 21st, 2018. I'm here with Tim Slowinski at the Limner Gallery, his gallery, and we're here, it's on in Hudson, and we're here, I'm part of the Oral History Summer School, and we're here to do an interview about the archive. Tim, can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Tim Slowinski. As we just learned, at 123 Warren Street, Limner Gallery, my gallery and art studio, that I started in 1987.
Yeah, great. Can you tell me more about the gallery?
Well, prior to opening the gallery, I had lived for many years over by Woodstock, New York, just painting and doing various jobs. And I did some activities, some work with the Art Association in Woodstock, running the exhibits, like chairman of the exhibits, and on the board of directors and stuff. And I did that. They also owned a house there that had been abandoned that was donated to them by one of the Guggenheims. And I organized it was an artist house, a group of artists to move in there. It was called the Burr House. And I ran that for about 4 years. It's like an artist workspace where artists lived and worked. And instead of paying rent, we did rehabilitation work on the house. So I had been living there for many years, and I had been seriously working on my paintings, and I had built up quite a large amount of artwork that I had been exhibiting locally there in Woodstock, a few different exhibits. And then I had a show in Manhattan in 85 in a nightclub on 13th Street. Back then there was a big art scene like in the East Village area of Manhattan. And that was in that area, so I did that show. And then I met a few people there, some gallery owners. Someone offered me an exhibit in their gallery a couple blocks from there, so I had a show there. And that particular gallery owner offered me a bigger solo show that I had been working on for a year when they suddenly closed their gallery and canceled everything. So at that point, it was kind of, I had gotten frustrated with the art gallery world, kind of because my paintings are sort of political and also some kind of psychological, I guess, and they tend to be kind of more on the intense or disturbing side, or some people are bothered by them. Usually people either really like them or they really hate them. And I found that most people that owned art galleries, even though they would say stuff like, wow, these are great paintings, and somebody's going to give you a big show of stuff, but it would always end with, not me. So I got kind of tired of it, and I decided that what I was going to do was open my own gallery, which everyone told me was a really bad idea. But anyway, so I looked around New York City, and in that East Village area, it was kind of like a big art scene for I don't know, about 4 or 5 years. And then it was still going, but it kind of was towards the end where some people had given up or moved out. And so there was empty stores that had been galleries, and they were all set up. They had lights in them, and you know, they were ready to go. So I rented this tiny little gallery store that had a gallery in it. And the rents back in at that time were like really cheap. Like you could rent a store, that storefront I rented was like $600 a month. Same thing now is probably like what, $8,000 or $10,000 a month. But anyway, so I rented this storefront and set up my paintings and put on a show. And I was kind of surprised that people came in and just started buying stuff. And I sold like a whole bunch of stuff that first month. So then I thought, well, this is great. And I will get some other artists that I know and put in their paintings, and then they'll sell them, and it'll be like your gallery, you know? Because I had no idea when I started it that it was going to be anything more than just like, you know, one exhibit, really. I was just trying to sell some paintings. So I had, of course, I didn't live there either. I couldn't afford an apartment because I had been living in the back up in this house in the middle of the woods in Woodstock, and where I had just been trading work for rent. I didn't even pay anything. It was back at the end of Mink Hollow Road. And so I just was basically camped out, sleeping on the back of this little tiny 9 foot wide gallery store and painting back there, and then putting on these shows. So I put on like shows for like two or three exhibits, and nobody sold anything. And I had money from what I sold in my own paintings that I was just using to pay the rent and stuff. But then after a few months, you know, gradually money's going down. You got to, you know, pay to live and pay the rents and everything. And so I thought, oh man, what am I gonna do? So well, I'll put on another show of my own painting. So I print up some more cards, and the whole time I'd been still painting there in the back of the store, and put on another show. And I sold a bunch of paintings out of that show. And so then I tried the same thing again, put in more exhibits, same kind of thing happened. And it was kind of a process over the first couple of years where I would have a show of my paintings, or I'd make some money, and then it would start to slowly run out, and I'd do it again and make some more, and it would start to slowly run out. And then I think after the first year or so, I had actually moved from that little tiny store next door in the same building to like, it was another gallery that had been there, but it was bigger, twice as big. So I was in that spot. But by then, the whole neighborhood East Village art scene had started to collapse. And there was, and I mean, it became gentrified after that, but there was a brief period like where all the galleries moved out, or were moving out, and before the kind of the new businesses moved in, where it reverted for a year or two back into total chaos, where you had drug dealers all over the place, and especially on my block was really bad. The store that I had been in next door, right in the same building, was taken over by a bunch of drug dealers who made a fake little supermarket. They put like some food in the window, but the whole store was empty, and they had like a 1-inch thick plexiglass booth that they hid in the back and passed drugs out. And they were kind of in competition with another gang of drug dealers who was on the other side of the street. And one night I wasn't there when this happened, but someone told me that the guys from across the street basically came into the store, with the little store next to me, with machine guns, and told the guys they had 30 minutes to get the hell out, and the guys just disappeared. But that's kind of what the situation. And it was even like the police had closed down my block, and they were, it's like, how can you run a gallery on a block where you're not allowed to walk down the street, right? And then not only that, but they would, one time I was there painting in the back of my gallery, and the police, a couple of police came into my store with their guns out and said, just be quiet. And they hid inside my store behind the wall to stake out these guys on the block. And after a while, they charged out and arrested these guys. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, they didn't even ask me. They just came in and told me to shut up. And they're using my place to charge out of and arrest these guys for selling drugs across the street from my place. So it was kind of like, it became sort of a situation where it was a good time to move out, along with the other galleries who had left.
Sorry, just a technical issue.
Is it working?
Yeah, oh, it's working. Oh, sorry.
And kind of what had happened, which is kind of an interesting story, is there was this East Village neighborhood that had like, I don't know, like, I think it was like 300 something galleries down there within a few blocks. And towards the end, there was only like me and like two or three other galleries. And what had happened was the bigger gallery that had more money was over in Soho on the other side of Manhattan, and where they were putting on the big shows and everything. But there had been so much attention and publicity and money, like people going over to the East Village, these little stores like mine, and buying stuff, that it kind of started to bother them. And there was something that happened, it was almost a conspiracy whereby a couple of big buildings on the edge of Soho on Broadway were renovated into like gallery buildings, like multi-floor building with all these nice galleries. And they built the galleries, right? And then these developers came over to the East Village and they went door to door and they told the gallery owners, say, look, you don't want to be here in this crummy neighborhood with these little guys. Come over here with the big art dealers, the Soho, and we'll give you this huge gallery space, really cheap rent, and you know, you'll be a Soho art dealer, right? And so they got a number of the better, more established art galleries to move, like on the same weekend, bam, they all left. And it was like the next day, the next week, you know, for months and almost years thereafter, constant bombardment of articles in the New York Times, the Village Voice, and all the art magazines, the theme of which was the East Village is dead, it's defunct, it's over, anybody who's there is a loser, you know? And they came out with so many of these articles that everybody who was there, because people in the art business are so conscious of their image, you know, and they all want to be in what's the happening scene. And here they were being told by the New York Times and Art in America that they're losers because they're still in this crummy spot. And within a couple of months, they all left. It was like they charged out and there was no one left. And so I was still there, but it was kind of like, people weren't coming around, they weren't coming to see the shows, you know, they didn't want to buy the paintings. So it was kind of like either you had to pack up or you had to move, you know, over there with those guys. So I went over and looked around and I found a huge loft in this building in that same area on Broadway. And I moved into that. And I did that for a few years. And the problem with New York, I mean, now it's kind of probably hard to get a place anywhere, but back then you could always get a crummy place. Like, you'd always find a crummy store or a beat-up loft where the rent was not that much, you know, and you could get a deal, and they'd always just want to give you a couple of years, 2-3 years, and the most usually they'd give you was like 4 years. So you get a 4-year lease, and you'd come into this wrecked place, and I mean, at that time, being kind of younger, I guess, and more naive and full of energy, you know, and it was kind of like 4 years is a long time, right? So you weren't really thinking about what's going to happen after that. You're just thinking, here you got this beat up store and you want to have a nice gallery. And so I would fix the whole thing up, you know, you'd like fix the walls, the ceiling, the floors, whatever, put in lights, paint it, make it really nice. And then when the 4 years is up, it's like, oh, this place was, you know, $1,100 a month, but now it's $3,000. And it's like, you know, come on, I can't do that. Well, I'll see you later. And so they, you know, get someone else to